Blog Talk Radio.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Johnson from Santee, South Carolina, with the Monday edition of the Triple Wing Hammer Report, and I want to thank all of you for tuning in. And it's been a good ride, you know, with these shows and everything. I tell you, we're getting better and better each week, getting suggestions each week and everything, and seeing how they work out. And I just want to thank you for your input and thank you for your support. And I mean, just thank you, because we do it out of love. We don't do it for no compensation or anything. We just do this out of love, trying to get you exposure about your program, so people can just sit and listen to what you do in your program. Before we get started with our guest tonight, I want to give a shout out to Coach Daly down at the University of South Carolina. I mean, wow. National champions. You know, she has done one real job of building that program down there for those women. You know, I was learning some things about that program last night as I was driving along on the way back to South Carolina. And I meant back home. And I was just listening to how she built that program, when nobody would come see her play, to now she averaged about 13,000-14,000 people every time they tip the ball off. That's great. You know, that's how you build a program. And, you know, a lot of people look at people when they built those programs, but they really don't look at the bad times and the challenging times that most people have, you know. And trust me, you don't drop in this world winning a championship of any kind. There's a lot of work, a lot of planning, and my hats off to them. Hats off also to Coach Martin and his team. Wow. I mean, the resilience in those guys in coming back and just refusing to quit. Stellar job. You know, and who would have thought that two of the top teams in the country would be playing in the Final Four as far as South Carolina, and with the men and the women team. But my hats off to both of them. They did a very good job. A couple more things, house cleaning and everything. We're going to add a couple of things to our show, and I'll tell you more about that next week going forward, or I'll post it on my Facebook page. And we kind of redoing my Facebook page a little bit, so we can get a little bit clear on everything, so we can get things out there better than what we've been doing. It looks kind of clunky, I think. And we're gonna try to get some things done with that, because there's a lot of information that's going to be coming down the pipe, and I want to get that compartmentalized. So you guys can go ahead and pull the information or any information that you want and see if it can help you in your program. There's a lot of things out there, and you know, it's one glove, I forgot how that saying goes, but one glove doesn't fit everybody. I think that's how it goes. So all of us have different things that that we like to do. And but the thing I always say, whatever you marry yourself to it, and ride that puppy until you come with success. Tonight we got one of the coaches in the state. He's a, I don't know how quiet he is, but I think he's a rising star in his business. He's done a fantastic job down at Christ School, and has even gotten him to a state championship. Actually won a state championship. Wow. That is wild, and that is great. You know, he has built that program. That program has stabilized, always in the hunt. And all the time I see him, he reminds me of David in the Bible. Every time I see him, he's always talking to people, always trying to get himself better, always trying, tell me how you do this, tell me how you do this. You know, like David, when he was trying to go fight Goliath, he was always running around, you know, tell me what the reward was if I kill Goliath. What the reward was, and tell me how to do it. And this guy, he reminds me so much of him. Let's see if we can bring the great Sean Wright on and see if we can learn something from him. And, I could tell you a little bit about him, but I like people to tell them about themselves. So let's see if we can get Sean Wright from Cross High School. Let's see if this technology is working tonight. Don't do this to me. There we go. Sean, you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm right here.
All right. Got you, man. I got you. Got that country. That's good, man. I was worried about that. We had some weather going through last night. I thought they may have knocked the one pole we have down going across now. But we got you. How's everything going, man?
Well, we just had a storm come through here, and I was kind of worried about the connection. But it looks like it kind of passed through, so we may be able to get a little something done tonight.
Oh, we hope so, because I'm waiting to learn from you. You know how you get this thing done and everything. How's the family?
Say again.
How's the family?
Everybody's doing well. Everybody's doing well. In fact, the kids, they come home and do their homework, and the wife kind of cooks, and I try to come and clean up my part and just try to help out where I can help out. You know.
That is good, man. That is great. I used to, when I was down at the branch, I used to work with your mother-in-law. And I didn't realize that was your mother-in-law until your daughter came and worked for a year in that school trip. And it wasn't then that I started putting it all together when she told me that you were her son-in-law and everything. But tell you what, man, you got a special one there. A mom-in-law and a wife.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I happened to go down to Manning, South Carolina, and I was able to pull some gold out of there. So you're right. I am very grateful for my mother-in-law, mother-in-law. I don't quite call it mother-in-law, but mother-in-law, and definitely my wife. She holds it down. She's the head coach of this house, you know.
Well, that's good. That is fantastic, man. Well, John, let's have a since we and make sure you tell I say hello. Give her a number too, okay?
I sure will.
Okay. Let's see if we get to know you a little bit, okay? Again, you know, this is a free-going show. You know, we talk about a lot of stuff, you know, but
right.
You know, I'll take it anywhere you want to go. But for those people out of state who don't know you, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? Well, tell us a lot about yourself.
Yes, sir. I'm born to to two educators. My mom was a guidance counselor in Berkeley County for 30-something, you know, plus years, and my dad was a math teacher in the elementary school for 30-something plus years, and he also was a magistrate. So, you know, I had two educators as parents, or have two educators as parents, and, you know, I kind of fell into that same track, believe it or not, and I didn't think I was going to go that route after high school. Played football, you know, and then after high school was able to obtain a scholarship to Charleston Southern, and upon graduating from Charleston Southern, really didn't know what I wanted to do as far as my life was at the time. And I happened to go to the weight room one afternoon, and Art Craig, who's the current head coach at Timberland, he was the head coach at Cross at that time. And I was in the weight room, and he actually thought I was a transfer player, and he got kind of excited because back then I was, you know, I had some pretty good muscles on me. But he thought I was a transfer player, you know, coming to his program. And, you know, our first conversation was, you know, what high school, you know, did I come from? And then after I told him, you know, who I was and you know, my mom was working there currently, you know, he asked me did I want to get involved into football. And I knew I wanted to get involved in football, but I had not secured that certification to teach. Anyway, things kind of led up to me coming on the staff as an assistant. Wasn't certified, so I worked as an aide in the classroom, and that started my football career, so to speak. And I haven't really looked back. You know, worked there and was able to gain some valuable experience under him. And then Art Mann came from Saluda or Strong Thunder, one of the two schools. I can't remember exactly which one. And then I was able to kind of cut my teeth as far as calling offensive plays. And I guess, I don't know if it's a gift or not, but, you know, I did pretty good that first year calling plays. And we ended up losing to ESCO, you know, in that first round of the playoffs. And then, you know, I kind of felt the need if I was going to kind of become an even better coach or, you know, evolve a little bit more, that I would have to maybe venture off from Cross at that particular time. So I ended up going to Timberland, and I had to humble myself back down because I was calling plays at Cross. And then when I went to Timberland, I was just kind of the running back coach and, you know, just kind of staying under Art's leadership until I got certified at the Citadel. So I was at Timberland from 2002 to 2006, and I was able to get certified in 2007 at the Citadel. And then that's when I got my first teaching job at King Street High School. And I taught there and coached football under Will Lampkin. And I was on the defensive side of the ball at King Street. And then in 2009, Coach James Waring was the current coach at Cross. He resigned or something happened, and then I was able to put my name in that hat at Cross, and I was able to secure that job at Cross. And all during that time, you know, I was able to meet my lovely wife, and we had three beautiful kids, and I kind of was able to work my way through that process, and so here I am currently now, the head football coach and athletic director at Cross, and we've won a couple games, and we were able to win the big one. But like you said earlier, you know, I'm still trying to learn. And what an opportunity and platform I have here to learn from none other than you.
So, well, I don't know. Doing all the talking right now.
Well,
I don't know how to learn.
I'm doing the talking, but you and I both know that this journey, you know, when I came into this thing, you know, people like yourself, you know, y'all, we all kind of gravitated toward each other, and that meant a lot to me, especially being a young coach coming along and having to be able to bounce ideas off of people like yourself and Coach Wayne and just a whole lot of other coaches that Coach Farmer down there at Scotch Branch, Coach Ford at Allendale, Coach Cave at Whale Branch. You know, we just kind of, we were able to bounce ideas off of each other and made some good lifelong friends in this journey, man. So, you know, I'm just grateful to be in this profession, dealing with these young boys and young girls.
What is your basic philosophy when it comes to building programs? Now, I know you've only been one place. That's across.
Right.
But over the years, we kind of develop a philosophy, or as they, you know, now they don't use that big word philosophy, because a lot of us can't, you know, we study when we sit. But your brand is your brand.
Right.
When they call Sean Rice's name, what is he known for?
Well, to be honest with you, I had to learn a lot on the run. We think we're ready for these jobs when we interview for these jobs. But to me, I think each community is a little bit different. And the thing at Cross is, and I went to Cross, so, you know, I was able, I kind of knew the undertow of what was there and the potential of that place. So basically what I needed to do, and to me, this is my philosophy on building a program. You have to start with the adults. If you don't have adults on your staff that are just as hungry to learn as you are, and I'm talking about everybody has to have their own role, and we have to be selfless people. And so I knew if I could assemble a staff, we had the ingredients as far as the kids. Cross, places like Cross and St. Stephen and Macedonia, and those schools are closed down and they become Timberland, but Holly Hill and Ellery, you know, the surrounding areas, you're going to always have the ingredients of players, but you have to bring in humble, capable, reliable, efficient adults to kind of help, because I was told before I got my head job, you cannot do this thing by yourself. And what I was able to do, and I'm truly grateful, is I was able to bring the adults in. And once we got the adults in there, we were able to implement just a rigorous off-season program, weight program, and we attacked it that way. And I think we were able to see the fruits of our labor, you know, a little bit quicker than some people have. But well, again, if you truly understand the community in which you're going into, and you can see the talent, all you have to do is make that talent believe in what you believe in, and things can work. And like I said, I'm being from Cross, you know, I knew what it took. So, you know, if I were to leave Cross and to go to another community, you may have to ask this question to me again. But the philosophy that I took at Cross was just bring the adults there. And once I got the adult there, I knew that the ingredients, the kids that we have, would have been able to take hold to that and just run with it.
How did you get your staff to buy into you?
Well, number one, I wanted coaches. Anytime I look for a coach, I would like to have one who's played on the college level. And so when you get coaches that have played on the college level, you already come in with the ideas and the knowledge and the information of what it takes for a program to run. So every coach that I had or have on my staff played Division I college ball, and to bring that to a place like Cross, that's special, and it is special no matter where you're at, because I think what happens is so many guys that will have a staff, you know, you may not have coaches that have played on that level, and so it's going to take everybody just kind of trusting you. But, you know, I could trust the man next to me because I know that he also did what I did, you know. We trained the same way. We lifted the same way. And another thing that I look for is guys who were in successful programs. I hired two coaches that played for Berkeley and also played college ball and coached under Jerry Brown and also coached under Steve LaPrade at Fort Dorchester. So I was able to bring those guys at Cross, and I was able to bring a former head coach from Pennsylvania, you know, on the staff. So the staff, the adults that we have here at Cross, you know, everybody to me, you know, they call me the head coach, but to me, everybody can run this thing because of the trust that we have in each other. So buying into me wasn't as hard because everybody had already done that. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay. Now, I knew your principal, Bush, Adrian, I believe, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did you, and I know you got another one, but I'm going to ask you about that in a minute. How did you, and now was Adrian your first principal, or you had one before Adrian?
I had two principals before Adrian. My first principal was Rob Streeter. Rob hired me, and Rob was kind of a nomad. He was at a lot of different schools, but he was a football coach, and so he understood what it took when I got hired. So I was, you know, Rob. I had Rob Streeter, then I had Sterling Harris. Sterling Harris was not a football coach, but Sterling Harris was always around the game and loved the game of football. So I had him, and then once he left, then I had Adrian come in. And Adrian was a complete surprise because I had no idea who we were getting as far as the principal. When he walked through the door, I knew that was going to be a match made because Adrian was a former coach, football, basketball, you name it. And so, you know, that's another thing. You're talking about building a program. When you got a principal that understands what it takes, man, that means the world to an AD or to any coach. So I've been blessed, man. I've been very, very blessed.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. How do you get along with your administrators? How do you get your administrators to buy into what you were doing?
Well, the biggest thing is they have to, once they learn who I am, and once they know that my passion, I'd be lying if I said my passion wasn't to win football games, but that's not the main thing that I'm in business for. My passion is to change the lives of young people, and I think that every administrator that I've come in touch with, they've always seen what I did outside of the football field. They've always been able to see what I did, you know, in my classroom or when I would bring different speakers in to my team. And not just football, but, you know, everybody, you know, girls, boys, didn't matter. So the passion that they saw, you know, I always let them know academics is always going to be to the top, but athletic got to be rubbing that coattail right behind. Because believe it or not, if your back, this is just my belief. I could be totally wrong here. If your programs are winning programs, especially football and basketball, because that's the money makers of the school, 9 times out of 10, the climate as far as behavior and academics are going to be a little bit better after school, after school throughout the years. You show me good programs, I'll show you good students, because what does every student want to do on Friday night? They want to be able to come to the game. They don't want to be suspended. What do they want to do? They want to be able to not get in trouble that they're not. They can't. They get their grade so they're eligible in sports. So, administrators, I've always been able to be really, really in-depth with them about how passionate I was for kids and using athletics and academics to pull them along. So that's what I've been able to do.
How do you keep everybody happy? You being athletic director and everything, you know, that old thing, you know, the football coach and the athletic director, they are, you know, everybody's going to get everything and all that.
That's a surprising question. And, you know, first of all, making everybody happy is going to be almost impossible. I don't think you can make everybody happy. And that's not my goal, to make everybody happy. My goal is to treat everybody fair. Now, me treating you fair may not bring you happiness, but at the end of the day, the integrity in which I approach you or approach the situation, you can't frown upon that because it's fair. And so my goal is not to make you happy, but to treat you fair. And if I treat you fair, I think happiness can come from that. The moment I'm not fair, then I'm going to lose coaching. And to be honest with you, this is going on my 8th year. I've lost 3 coaches in eight years, and that's at a single-A school. And that's, you know, I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for that. So, you know, I can't make everybody happy, but what I do is I make sure that they understand that I'm going to treat them fair. I'm going to not just spend money with football. I'm going to make sure that each program is advocated for. We have a good booster club, so I make sure that every coach has a parent available for those booster club meetings, because truly when you have someone that can speak on your behalf for your program, for you, that goes a long way. And so we're able to just have a good family feel, from the academics to the athletics to the booster club, and that's how I've kind of been able to keep not so much everybody happy, but everybody understanding that Coach Wright is going to treat them fair.
Now, do your kids, how do you keep it going after, you know, you won that state championship?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that the kids set their goal to do, to get back to that game, or is that standard that you set? How does that work at Cross Course? It's a little bit different once you know. It could be either way.
That's a good question. And to be honest with you, I don't have the answer for that question per se, but this is how we do it at Cross, because I would love to know how you feel about that as well. But we never really discuss goals at Cross. And the reason why, and this is just my personal belief, I don't discuss a lot of goals with the kids, because I think when you deal with kids, you're going to get something different every single day. is when you start discussing goals, to me, you set yourself up sometimes for failure or disappointment, because believe it or not, I've been disappointed more by setting goals than not, if that makes any sense. I've set goals before, and we've attempted to go get it, but and we've met some of them, but, you know, some of them we didn't meet, and I've been always disappointed by the ones we didn't meet. So what I tell my kids is every day we're going to treat this thing the same way, consistency. You know, having a consistent coaching staff, you know, that stability is still there. The nucleus of that state championship run we made, that's still at cross. That hadn't changed. And the kids kind of just understand from rec league all the way up that this is what we want to do. If you come on this football team or into my program, this is the type of work that you're going to have to put in. When you come into my weight room, there's a big picture of the state championship team, and my office is now in the weight room. So, you know, those guys know that you have to be able to live up to the expectations of what you see around you. And they see a lot of championship-type stuff around them. You know, I don't wear my ring, but we got a replica of the ring, you know, up in the weight room. We got the picture of the state championship in the weight room. You know, the equipment we have in the weight room, you know, it's state of the art. So, you know, we constantly remind these kids, and they've kind of bought in. And like I said, you know, knowing the ingredients that we have in the community of Cross, if they had done this, if they had got the hires right, or those coaches would have kind of taken the approach of making sure that they had capable adults around them, Cross would have had more than one state championship, in my belief.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Going back to your community, you know, we were there about 2 or 3 weeks ago for one of the track meets, and
right.
I was amazed. Those people are, you know, you can see the pride in Cross. How do you keep that community spirit going?
What we do at Cross is, you know, my coaches, they coach more than one sport. And so my defensive coordinator is the boys' head track coach. My head basketball boys coach is the girls' track coach. My baseball coach is the equipment manager for my football team. The softball coach, he runs the clock for me on Saturday night. It's like what we do is we kind of branch off after football season, but the kids still see us. They still train with us. We still practice them, and it all comes back to football, you know. So that pride is we around those kids every single day. We coach them every single day. You know, I don't have coaches that just coach baseball or just coach track and not help out with football. And that's something that we kind of take pride in as far as coaching. We want to always be around our kids. To me, you find out about your kids during the spring, because normally kids shut it down after January, as far as athletics. They shut it down. But if you can find kids to compete from February to May, that's a special kid. Because it's hot. You don't have to be out there. Nobody, you don't have as much fanfare coming to the game. So it's really about the individual, themselves. How hard are they going to work themselves? Because, you know, those sports during that time is really a lot of individual work. Even though it's a team sport, it's a lot of individual, motivation that you need. And so my coach is being around those kids during that time. That enables us to keep our foot on the pedal, and that's where you see that pride come from. I see that you're involved with your track, so you kind of know exactly what I'm talking about.
Trying to get it that way. Now,
but the kids got the buy-in. The kids got the buy-in during that time.
Oh yeah,
they got the buy-in.
They got the buy-in. Now, you work with your kids' parents very close in everything. I'm going to assume that.
Yeah.
How many little Johnny Knuckleheads do you have? And how do you deal with Johnny Knuckleheads?
Now, that's something that is a very fine line. Especially at a place like at Cross. Here's what I mean by that. I don't have the luxury of having 40 to 50 players on my team. You know, I don't have the luxury of having kids playing on one side of the ball. I don't have that luxury. And so most of our kids understand that you're going to have to pretty much buy into everything. You know, they have to be tough kids because they don't leave the field. I had a chance to speak down at the principal AD meeting, and we were talking about the sixth quarter rule, and they were complaining about, kids, eight quarter and six quarter and that kind of stuff. And I told, everybody in that meeting, because I got huddle now, I'm able to look at the amount of plays we run in a particular game. Well, I have kids that play 140 to 150 snaps a game. That's eight quarters.
Mm-hmm.
That's six quarters. And so the Johnny's or whatever you said it, Johnny come lately or those knuckleheads, they're weaned out by just the sheer toughness of how you have to be in order to make it on our team, and so I don't really have to put up with the knuckleheads. Going back to 2012, if you look at the roster on the state championship team, we only took 29 kids. Now, in the beginning of the year, I had close to 40, but through attrition and just those kids not being able to handle the rigor of how we went about our business every day, they end up cutting themselves. I don't cut kids. I don't get rid of kids. They get rid of themselves. We put our rules out. We make sure that we stick to those rules as far as the adults. And the kids know they either go cut it or they can't cut it, As far as practice is concerned, you can only miss two practices and don't tell me. In other words, you can miss a practice if you tell me. I'm going to still punish you, but you'll be okay. If you miss a practice and I don't know about it, you got two times to do that, and you out of there. And so, those things, they help out. They help out. Plus, I got coaches on my staff that, to me, they don't put up with just anything. I got Jimmy Woods, who used to be the former head coach at Simmonsville, in order to play on the offensive line for him, you got to be a certain type of kid. you know, and you know, Coach Denario Small, you know, in order to play defense for him, you got to be the same type of team. So, do we have knuckleheads? Yes, we do. But we try to work with those knuckleheads until they either get it right or they get gone.
Now, do you have, in a lot of small schools, there's a challenge when it comes to academics and athletics and everything. First part of the question, do you lose a lot of kids from academics? They just don't do it in the classroom?
No, sir. No, sir. I knew it.
Now, the second part of the question is, what do you do?
Okay, so now the question was, do I lose kids
because of
academics? And if I did, what do I do?
If you're academic, if you don't lose a lot of kids in academics, what are you doing to keep those kids focused on academics and athletics at the same time?
Okay, good question. Well, I have lost in my 8 years, two kids to academics. And I don't know if I can take as much credit to that as opposed to this community. These parents, they care about their kids really. And what we do is just come from the administration on down. We have to have mandatory study hall. We have to. And the only way you get out of that study hall is if you don't have any failing grades. And we all know we're going to have kids that can fail class or two. And those kids are mandatory study hall. And that's regardless of what sport, doesn't matter. And we get out of school at 3:45, and in my program, nobody was able to start practice before 4:30. Nobody. And so, if you got a kid that not feeling anything, then your kid going to do get ahead type move. And definitely, if you have a kid that still in a class or two, you know, you're going to do a study hall and you're going to work with those people. And that comes from the administration down, and that's something that I view as very important to anybody's program, because the knock on most of our kids is they're good athletes. They don't go anywhere after school because they don't have degrees. And sadly to say, you know, as far as I have had several cases where I've had a great athlete not make it because of academics. And, you know, I'm constantly trying to find ways to motivate these kids to work. But, hey, again, a lot of things that come from home, man. You know, you can do so much at the school, but when they get home, if they don't pick up a book in that house, it's going to be tough.
Now, do you always do better during the season than off season?
Of course, naturally, you know, I'm kind of more involved with the majority of the kids' football season. You know, especially that being a large number of kids. And then when I lose them, I make sure that I make the record. I make sure those coaches are doing what I do. So the basketball coaches, they got study hall. And so what you call an off-season, maybe an off-season for me, but as the athletic director, I make sure that I have off-season for them. Well, there are other times when they're playing other sports.
Okay. Now, you run, I'm going to talk a little bit about offense, not particularly play and everything, but your philosophy and everything. How did you come up with your offensive philosophy?
Well, when I first started at Cross, we were in an option-based office, and I knew that the success we had, we didn't have real good offensive line, and I knew that running option-type plays always gave us a chance, even when we played teams that we knew were better than us. And so I knew no matter where I went, that option was going to be a big part of what I wanted to do. And I started that, and when I moved on to Timberland, we kind of ran a little bit more wind, more power football. And as a linebacker, I played linebacker, and it's funny that I'm over the offense now. I knew what it took me as a linebacker, and I always knew how to get a defense off kilter. And so what I did was I took some wing teeth and wing teeth formation, but I always kept option football along with it. And prime example, when we run the inside blitz, which is a play from the triple option, it looks no different than the buck sweep, the old Packer, Green Bay Packer play, the buck sweep when you pull two guards. To a linebacker, that play does not look any different, but yet you got different blockers coming to block you. And when I saw our team had a hard time defending those two plays alone, I knew that this was the type of offense that I would want to definitely keep. And so that's how that kind of created my offensive philosophy. And of course, I can't tell you, studying some of the things you did, especially with that hammer, that kind of really took that thing to a whole nother level. So we got a neat little package, you know. It's been pretty good to us.
And defensively, what's your take on defense? Your basic philosophy.
Well, the number one thing that we want to be able to do on defense is chase the football. We want kids that are able to, no matter what, chase the football. Now, you have to teach them how to number one line. You got to teach them how to get off the block. But it's hard to teach kids to consistently run to the football. And so that's the first thing that we do. We do pursuit drills every single day. I've also noticed that it doesn't matter which front you in. Like people like a lot of people like run 4-man, 5-man, 3-man. That none of that matters if you don't have kids that want to run to the football. And so my idea, because you may see us in a 4-man front, you may see us in a 5-man front, you may see us in a 6-man front. We are very multiple. We move our kids around. But the one constant is if you turn the film on, when you look at Cross and defense, you've got 11 people that have given supreme effort to make a play. And so that's kind of my philosophy.
You take that same mindset from the weight room. Let me ask the question this way. Does the weight room make you who you are right now?
There's no question that weight room, and not only the weight room, but that summer condition, that to me separates us more so than anything else. And let me tell you, I've been able to speak, a couple players. And this is something that I love to share. When you condition your kid, especially when it's hot, we found that if you don't tell your kids exactly what they're going to do for conditioning or how much they're going to do, your kids never relax. How many times in the game you've been up big and blown the lead? Or how many times you've been behind and came back and took the lead? That means somebody's team relaxed. And what we found out is when we don't tell our kids what we're going to do, and they just have to show up and listen to what we want to tell them, whether that's the weight room, whether that's running, then we found that our kids never are able to relax. And that's a different thing.
What system do you use in the weight room?
You're the Sean
Rice system?
Well, what we do, and it's kind of all over the place. You know, we break it down to three different periods. Okay, you got the end season, which we try to maintain where we at. Then you got your off season, which we try to build as much. That first thing that the winter season, after the season, we try to build as much as we can as far as explosion and muscle mass. And then coming into the spring, we get away from that, and now we focus more on endurance and speed. And then during the summer, we go right back to the building. We try to really put on a lot of fat. You know, like how bears do when they hibernate, they eat a lot of. We try to get them as strong as we possibly can during the summer, along with the conditioning, because we know once the season starts, you're going to have to pull from that for what you've already sold. And so our weight room kind of goes all over the place. You know, we go from anything from the pyramid to, you know, five sets of five. You know, it's kind of all over the place. We never try to do the same thing once. We always trying to push the envelope as far as that concerns. And a big thing that we do in the weight room is tempo. I think a lot of coaches make this mistake. When you're on the football field, there's a 24 or whatever seconds before you have to snap the ball again. Is it 35, 40 seconds? I can't remember. Well, anyway, we tell our kids this is no different. If you have a kid that's on the bench press and he does his rep, and he doesn't do his rep again, in 2 minutes has gone by or 3 minutes has gone by, that's not realistic. And so we make sure that the tempo is just like the game. And that's a big key to also helping your kids be conditioned at all times.
Now, all of your staff, I'm using the right English or not, is all your staff, I still want to know, English teacher, Ms. Nancy Williams, she's going to kick my butt.
Right.
You have all your staff in the weight room?
I have at least two coaches. I have one coach with me in my weight room. So there's always two of us at all times. And if you don't have my class, like this year right here, if you don't have my weight room class, we got a group that comes at 7 o'clock in the morning. We call them the breakfast club. and we're able to look those guys in the horn at them. I got three coaches in there with me during that time, so very rare that I'm not in there by myself. And here again, that's another blessing that we have at Cross that a lot of other coaches don't have, especially at the smaller 1A school.
You say you do not have your weight class anymore?
Oh, yeah, I have my weight class. I thought you meant do I have weight coaches in there with me or other coaches in there. I do have my weight class. I have two weightlifting classes and PE. And we have two PE teachers, so really, realistically, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I pull my kids, my athletes out of the PE, and I kind of steal another weight room opportunity. So I got three kids where I lift my kids. But okay. That's the luxury of having two PE teachers.
Now, a lot of coaches call me and ask me, all right, coach, I got this job, and could you give me some pointers on some things I need to do? And I said, well, the first thing you need to do is call everybody and get some ideas. Don't just take one idea. But one of the top three things that I mentioned to the guys, I tell them, win the building. Make sure you win the building. And what I mean by that, you get those teachers on your side. Right. You get those teachers on your side, you got one hell of an ally there. What is your relationship with the teachers in your building?
Well, the thing is, and I don't think you need to stop with just the teachers. One of the things that I do, and I take my budget and I do this, on Friday, we call it Google. Every adult in the building is going to have something on that represents our football team. But, and that's going to be, and I'm talking about a T-shirt or a hat. So, and this is free of charge. So, every teacher in my building, what I do is the beginning of the year, I get their sizes and I purchase them a T-shirt. And all I ask is you want a T-shirt on Friday. Because I really believe when the building is in unison, everything else is going to fall in place. When we look alike, we won't act alike. And to me, that goes hand in hand. My teachers are constantly getting emails from me as far as checking up on my kids. My teachers are constantly getting emails from me. If you have a problem, I want to be the first, not defense, but I want to be the first intervention. You know, use me. And 9 times out of 10, if the teacher will email me first, I can almost cut the problem out, especially doing football teams. Because the punishment you get from me, if I get an email from the teacher or I get a bad report, you would rather deal with an assistant principal than deal with me. And so, from that aspect, I've always been able to have a good rapport with the teacher.
Do your kids police each other?
Now, that's a year-to-year thing. This past year, I didn't have kids that police each other. The year before that, in 2014 or 15 year, those guys police each other. And the year, the 2013 class didn't police each other at all. The 2012, they probably did as good of a job as I've ever been around in school. That class went on to win a state championship. The 2015 class, we police each other, got all the way to the semifinals. any team that didn't believe in themselves that I've been a part of, we've never been able to get out of the second round. And that's telling. And that's telling.
What did you do during the championship years versus now where you don't have that? What was different?
Well, the biggest thing that was different was that year we had an advantage. I don't think any 1A school had huddle during that time. We had huddle. And so the players always felt a little bit more prepared than they normally have been prior to this. Not only that, we took our fame, because again, I'm talking about us, the staff being college coaches. The scouting report that our kids were able to receive prior to each game that Monday, that's something that they have never been part of. And so we always felt prepared during that 2012 season. And we were able to keep that same philosophy. Those kids during that time, you know, they really took control. They took heed to what we were trying to do, and they took it and ran with it because they had never been treated that way before. And you know, that's something that we brought to the table as far as that was concerned. And that changed our whole program. We teach our players, especially on defense, to call the opponent's plays out. That in itself frustrates the opposition. A lot of times, when those kids, I ask my kids, what were those kids saying? And they were saying, so they're calling out our plays, you know, that type of stuff. And so that's kind of what we preach. You know? And so from 2012 forward, we were able to start that. And now, of course, everybody kind of caught up to that. And it came back down to that word you said, producing yourself. And so the difference in that year and any other year is the fact that you had some kids that really took advantage of the opportunity that was given to them, and you had some kids that just went through the motions.
What do you do to keep yourself ahead of the game?
What I do to do right now?
Keep yourself ahead of the game as far as learning and everything. I mean, who's already in his ways.
Well, and I think you said this in the beginning part of this season. I am smart enough to know that I don't know everything that I need to know. I'm constantly calling coaches. I'm constantly looking at other people's programs. I'm constantly going to clinics. In April, my entire offensive staff, we're going to Walker College, you know. So we just try to always beat down somebody else's goal because we just, you know, we're going to always constantly learn how to do things and to read, to maybe look at things a little bit different. And so, you know, that's part of my job. That's exciting to me to know that I can come to Coach Leonard Johnson and take something from him and bring it back to my guys. That's exciting to me, especially if it's something that I feel that we can benefit from. You know, it's exciting when I can take my staff to a college and we get that one-on-one, you know, meeting or that one-on-one session with the offensive coordinator or offensive line coach You know, I think it's invaluable when our staff can go visit some of these colleges, not when everybody comes to see them, but when they have some downtime, because most coaches will allow you to come up there and pretty much, you know, put them to a session like how we're doing right now, a one-on-one. You ask something, I tell you something. Well, I tell you something and you write it down. So I'm always doing that. And we're always doing that at Cross, and we're going to continue to do that no matter where I am.
When this young guy, Carl, has come to you and said, I want to work with you, Coach. Right, and tell you what I got. I got my playbook here, and I got the magic pill. I've been taught by one of the best, and I want to be your offensive coordinator. What are you going to tell that young coach?
Well, number one, and I'm going to tell it like I would always tell anybody else, and I like it. At the end of the day, and so far in my career, and this is kind of a tough question you ask me, but at this point in my career, you're going to have to understand that I am going to call this season. And in order for me to ever listen, calling those plays, to me, you're going to have to know this thing inside and out. Because to me, there's an art to calling plays on Friday night. And in order to get that art, you have to marry your own game plan. So for a young guy to bring his playbook to me, I don't understand playbook. I need to understand you before I understand your playbook. And so if I'm able to understand who you are and what you bring to the team as far as individual, then we can talk about what you can do for me on a Friday night. Now, that's offensively speaking. I cannot tell you what to do defensively.
I asked that question for a reason. And today I see more and more and more guys who are in a hurry to be a head coach.
Right.
And I see more cutthroating going on out there than I've ever seen before. Now, we had a win back in the day too, but it was a little more subtle than it is today.
Right.
Being a young coach, and see, these young coaches don't listen to old guys a lot.
Right.
What would you advise a younger guy who's trying to get in this business, and I'm sure they want to be the best coach they possibly, you know, and I'm not dragging young coaches. I love them. What could you tell them, being in the same age group that they are? What kind of advice could you give them, knowing what you know now?
The biggest thing is make sure that you are around people that love the game. Those young coaches need to first be around either head coaches or assistant coaches that love the game. And not only love the game, but love people. To me, those coaches who are jumping at the bit to become a head coach, do they really love people or do you just want to be a head coach? Because if you really love people, it is always hard for you sometimes to leave where you are. And so if I'm always jumping at the bit to become a head coach, that means I'm not liking or I have not liked where I have been. It's been hard for me to be wherever I was, no matter where I was at that time, because of the relationship I've built with the people or the kids. And to me, you know, that's the first thing. Make sure that you're around people that love other kids or love people. And secondly, you're going to have to be humble in this thing. And know that you're going to win games in every fashion, and you're going to lose games in every fashion. That goes without saying. That's going to happen. But it all comes back down to the relationship that you're going to build. Where you're at that particular time. You can't be worrying about 2 years from now, 3 years from now. You have to worry about where you at that particular time. And my advice to those guys is to learn as much as you can. But you know as well as I know, I don't care what you think you know until you jump in that driver's seat and you understand that you're the one to put the gas in, and you're the one that's going to steer that wheel, and you're the one that's going to press that gas, and you're the one that's going to press that brake. You ain't going to ever know enough, ever. And to me, the best coaches are the ones that understand that you're never going to know enough, because when you deal with people, something different going to approach you every single day. And it's going to test your grit. It's going to test your faith. It's going to test everything about you. Because I just believe that's how the man upstairs allows this type of profession to be. Because truly, it's about what you can do for somebody else, how you can serve. And to me, these young coaches, if they don't come from an aspect of that standpoint, man, you're going to get the backstabbing. You're going to get coaches that are going to get out of the business fast, or they're going to get fired.
If you were to spend, well, let me ask this question right here. Who has had the most influence on you in your short career?
There's a couple people. First off, my dad is still alive. My dad is 80 years old, and he's still alive. And hopefully I may be able to take this conversation and bring it back home. But my dad started me as a young boy. He taught the elementary school in Cross. And there's two different ways to get to my house. One way is by the stadium, and one way is not by the stadium. Well, during football season, he would purposely take me by the stadium. We never stopped for practice. We always slowed the car down almost about 10 miles per hour. And just for about 15 seconds, I was always able to see those helmets kind of running around the field. So that dream started for me as a young boy. And the older I got, you know, that thing was ingrained in me. He never beat football down my head. He just made sure I was always able to visualize those things. And as a young player, I saw the success that a couple of the Cross teams had. Like, I witnessed the 10-0 team back in 89, and I witnessed the region championships. And a guy by the name of Anthony Rose, I don't know if you know him or not, but he was the football coach at that particular time. And as a player, I always wanted to play his system. And then after leaving Cross, I was at CSU for a little while. I was at Southern University. And my junior year, we changed defensive coordinators, and a guy by the name of Todd Knight, who is currently the head coach at Newberry College, that man showed me who I truly was in this thing, because I became more of a player and became a student under his leadership and his guidance. And he really, really told me that I need to coach with college level. Now, at that particular time, I was young and crazy, and I didn't want to work as a GA because that didn't bring any money. And so I kind of GA for a couple months at Charlotte Southern, but then I was able to go and secure that assistant job at Claus on the Art Craig. And got to give Art a ton of credit, because he hired me and didn't even know me. I guess he just kind of felt I could help him out, to a certain extent. So those people were really very influential to me in what I'm doing now.
Okay. Now, last question.
Yes, sir.
And then I'm gonna let you go play with your kid model for a little bit.
Okay.
If a coach was to call you, and any coach in the country call you and say, Sean, you got 2 hours to spend with me. The question is, who would that coach be, and what would you talk to him about?
Wow. Who would that coach be? That's a tough question. Because I know I'm gonna leave somebody off by naming somebody. But who would that coach be? It has to be just one, or I can name one enough.
Just one.
Just one, and that person would be alive or deceased.
Alive or deceased.
Okay. I am a big, and I've always grown up, and I've always been a big Miami Hurricane fan, because I just thought that those kids down in Florida, or Miami, had a different type.
And who's that coach?
I'm about to tell you. But that coach would probably be Jimmy Johnson.
Jimmy Johnson?
Yes, sir.
And what would you talk to Jimmy about?
Just how he was able to sustain and create the atmosphere that to me is still with Miami. Because when I look at, the coaches that have come and gone, those kids are still back on the early days, the early 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, early 2000s, And so I was just asking, how was he able to sustain and create the atmosphere of that relentlessness, from those kids. And, that's the coach that came to mind right now, but I know there's others, and not just football coaches either, but that coach came to mind at this point in time.
Okay, well, that's good. I ask that question all the time because my meeting transformed my – I had an opportunity to meet with a guy for 1 hour. That's all the time he gave me. And it transformed my life when I was young, my coaching career. I mean, and just changed it, a different light on it and everything. There have been more since, but that meeting with him, just blew me away. And I hadn't been, I changed right there on the spot. Had not been the same since then. And
So I actually, everybody has that one coach. Well, Sean, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I tell you what, I enjoy this time with you. And
yes,
and you've done good.
Well, I tell you what, man, and I wanted to say this. When you asked me a couple of weeks ago to come on to this show, I would be remiss if I didn't say how much you meant and mean to me. I will never forget the week of the state championship game, the conversation you and I had going into the game. And the thing that you told me, you said, Sean, do not change who you are. Don't you know you are the only coach, and I got several good buddies in this thing. Don't you know you were the only coach that told me that? I wanted you to know that, coach.
I did not.
You were the only coach that called me. And see, we wonder why sometimes it's so hard for us to have success, because you don't like to see the other man's success. That's not you. And I wanted to tell you that on your show, what you have meant for me, because you didn't know me that well. You saw what we were doing. And in fact, you laughed at me when I told you you were playing state games. You said, good luck. But at the end of that season, the week, and I almost remember the day, but you called me that night on my way home, and you told me, do not change. And you created a sense of calmness for me that I needed going into that game. And I know that you come to a lake, man, and we big rivalry. Man, look at you. Go down as one of the best in my book.
Well, I'll send you the 77 cents I owe you in the mail tomorrow. You read it just perfect, what I sent you, okay? Thank you, Sean. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
I really
thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. Okay, good night, man.
Good night.
Well, that's another night. That's another episode, guy. I tell you, this guy's going to do some great things in his career. And you got to get to know these guys. They are just human beings, just like all of us. Well, thank you guys for hanging in with us. Those of you who are involved in that storm, I hope everything came out all right. And if you're going through it, it should be already blown over by now. But just if you're out there, just be careful. Next week, we got Greg Porter from Hillcrest High School. Greg just shot up on the map here about 3 or 4 years ago when he won the state championship. And I was asked, Greg, who's a Greg Porter? And I tell you what, I know who a Greg Porter is right now. But Greg is going to be on our show next Monday night, people. And guys, I really appreciate you. And keep listening. And if you have any questions or any one of these guys, just shoot it to me. And or you can get on yourself. Come on and ask a question yourself. I mean, this is your show. I'm just providing the avenue and everything. So, but this is your show. Until next week, guys. Take somebody, give them a hug, and y'all have a good one. And we will talk to you then.
Myself. What a wonderful world. see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue white, the bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more. I never knew, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
All right, guys, y'all have a good night. Give somebody a hug, give them a kiss, and tell them you love them. Have a great week. Good night.